This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, missing my co-host Paul Wearson, unable to get down to Ames because he lives in the country near Story City. I hope our guests have better luck. This is a good time to have some interesting radio stories to listen to wherever you happen to be. So, thanks to our guests for braving the roads to be with us today. The major part of our program will feature what is available in central Iowa for people with disabilities, including financial services and caucus training. Our first guest is the new Story County Supervisor, Lisa Heddens, and her guest, Carla Webb, Director of Community Services. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Lisa, you bring some new skills and experience to our County Board of Supervisors, and since this is your first time on KHOI, would you like to say just a little about that?
Certainly. Yes, I've been serving as a County Supervisor since June of 2019, so six, 7 months into my new role. We are working right now on the budget. We've been all week doing budget workshops, and that is part of the role of a county supervisor is to set the budget for the county, as well as being that conduit for citizens with any issues or concerns they have that we can connect them to the appropriate agency or service.
Well, I guess that today you are connecting our listeners to Carla Webb in community services. Is that right?
That's right. And I asked Carla to come along and talk a little bit about what is Story County Community Services, why someone would want to reach out to them, what they provide, and some of their statistics that they have available to just educate residents of the county.
Okay. Welcome, Carla.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Well, what are some of those statistics that you have for us?
You bet. Well, first, if I could just talk a little bit about our office and what it is that we do, and then I can share some statistics. We are located here in Ames. We have two primary programs that we work with. One is a general assistance program, and a primary part of that program is providing rent and utility assistance to individuals who are in need of meeting that. Generally, our assistance is one time per month. We can help twice in a year, so once every 6 months. The other part of our program that we work with is mental health and disability services. And within our office, we have four service coordinators who work with individuals to connect them to mental health and disability services. They have a wide array of knowledge. Some of the primary services that we work with is supported community living services. We have a couple of providers here in Ames and within Story County that provide that service, as well as supported employment services. An initiative that we launched through Central Iowa Community Services a little over a year ago was mobile crisis response team services. We've partnered with Ierley Ball Community Mental Health Services for that. Individuals can access that service by calling the Your Life Iowa, which is a statewide crisis line. Foundation 2 answers that line, and individuals in need of on-site counseling and support can request the mobile crisis response team services. Once they're dispatched, they're to arrive within an hour of being dispatched, and they will show up as a team of two, and they'll provide counseling and support to the individual wherever it is that they are at.
Now, how do people access these? This isn't a 911 call, is it?
No, it is not. It is by calling Your Life Iowa.
And how do you do that? Just figure out YOURLIFEIOWA?
Well, I have the number, and I haven't figured out if that is what it pairs up to or not, but the number is 855-581-8111. Folks can also text to Your Life Iowa, and that number is 855-895-8398. So when someone calls or reaches out to Your Life Iowa, and they can then request the mobile crisis response team, and then at that time they are dispatched.
Yeah, well, my concern is that, I could imagine having a crisis and wanting to call and not knowing how to do it.
You bet. Yeah. We're working on getting new marketing material out to the community because we just recently switched to the Your Life Iowa line. Prior to January 1st, we had the CICS crisis line, and we have marketing material on that line throughout our region. If anyone were to call that CICS crisis line, it does roll over to the Your Life Iowa line. It's the same entity answering the calls, so no calls should be dropped. But if people are familiar with that CICS crisis line, they'll be able to get connected.
And I just want to clarify that CICS does stand for Community Central Iowa Community Services.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well. Thank you. That occurred to me as being the most important piece of information that people need to have.
You bet. Just to get to the statistics that Lisa and you had mentioned, for our region is 11 counties, and region-wide in fiscal year 19, we had 757 calls to the mobile crisis response team, and of those calls that they were dispatched to, 526 individuals were able to be stabilized where they were at. They received counseling and support and did not need to go to the hospital. Of those calls, 96 individuals were transported to the hospital, and 0 individuals were taken to jail. So we do believe that this service is working. We want to continue to market it because we do think there's a high need for it yet. We think there's more individuals that we can reach with this service. So we're very proud of it at this time.
Carla, is there an age limit for who can receive services through crisis mobilization?
No, there is not. They serve children and adults.
Well, you mentioned this is several counties. What are the counties?
You bet. So Boone County, Franklin, Greene, Hamilton, Hardin, Jasper, Madison, Marshall, Poweshiek, Story, and Warren.
Well, several of those are in our listening area, so I hope that people are listening can refer their friends if they don't happen to be the ones who are listening.
Definitely. That would be great.
What is it like when somebody calls in and imagine there's, somebody who's suicidal? I imagine there's a lot of these are suicide calls, aren't they?
They could be, yes. Anxiety is an area that we see a lot of callers referencing as well. Third-party suicide, that is up there in our statistics as well. Some folks are just looking for information also, like on agencies and supports in that, which Foundation 2 can provide that. We have provided them information on all of the resources throughout all of our counties, so they can help make those referrals. But when somebody calls, they'll be connected right away to a counselor who will provide support to them and help them develop coping skills or mechanisms. Counselor that their person is speaking with, if they feel that or determine that the individual is in need of immediate assistance, they are able to then connect to law enforcement to have law enforcement dispatch to meet the individual.
You mentioned that nobody had gone to jail. So what does law enforcement do when they come in?
They then may be able to assist the individual if they do need to get to the hospital or be taken to the emergency room. They can assist in that transport and helping that individual get to safety. it's more of a, if there's an immediate health risk for that individual, that law enforcement may be contacted or emergency response services maybe as well.
Okay. Well, what are the other, are there any other services that you provide?
Sure, you bet. So our service coordinators that we have within our office, they're available to meet with individuals and families or friends one-on-one. They can visit with the individual and determine what services and supports they may need. They're able to then make referrals and get individuals connected. We do provide funding for services for individuals who meet our eligibility criteria. We see folks who are uninsured or underinsured who may need that assistance. We do have, of the four service coordinators, we have two service coordinators that work directly with the Story County Jail. So we have somebody over there generally Monday through Friday. And they're working to connect individuals who are in jail with mental health services that are available within the jail and work on discharge planning to ensure that they're connected to mental health and disability services upon their discharge from the jail. Some of the services that we currently have available in the jail that we fund are telepsychiatry services. We partner with Integrated Telehealth Partners to make that available. We partner with Central Iowa Recovery for intensive psychiatric rehabilitation services in the jail, and then Central Iowa Psychological Services. They have therapists that are available once per week over in the jail, can provide mental health evaluations, and then provide therapy services as well.
Do you have any feedback on this? Do you have any people ever say, you know, this saved my life, or really didn't help very much? But what do you have? Do you have any personal references for that?
You bet. We have had, over the last year, we have had a couple of individuals that we've worked with a few years ago that have reached back out to staff within our office, thanking them for their support and their services and sharing with them that they're in a better place now. And had it not been for that support, they might not be where they're at right now. So it's helpful for us to hear those things and to know that the work that we're doing is making a difference. There may be times when our resources are limited and we're not able to meet all the needs of individuals, but we certainly work very hard to do everything that we can to support.
You have, of course, the rent assistance is also one of your services that you mm-hmm. offer. Are these the two main services that you offer?
Our general assistance program and then the mental health and disability services are. With our general assistance program, we also provide transportation assistance if an individual who is transient passing through the state is needing help and getting further along in their destination. We can help them get across the state line in the direction that they are headed. We also do provide burial assistance for individuals who have passed away and do not have the resources to pay for that funeral care. Those would be probably our three. Rent or utility assistance as well is another area that is probably our more highly used service through our general assistance program.
Now, the utilities service, I'm familiar with some of those where people get regular help, like monthly with their heating bills. So this would be like when somebody's electricity is going to be cut off or...
Right. Yeah. So it's a one-time assistance. So it would be when they may be facing a disconnect notice. If the utility has already been cut off or unable to assist at that point, they would need to get it reconnected. But we could assist if it's a current utility bill and they meet our eligibility criteria. That's where our assistance would come into play.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like this is pretty much across the board, right?
Right, yeah.
But these are all preventative, I mean, to be help people pay their bills.
Correct.
And not pay their rent so they don't get
evicted,
right. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. Yep, it's to help try and avoid an individual being evicted or their utilities being shut off, help avoid someone facing homelessness.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, is there anything else that either of you would like to add?
You know, I would just like to add that one of the things that the region is working on right now is developing the children's mental health system. That was some language that the legislature passed last year, and so there is a children's advisory group that's looking at how to develop and the mandated services that the legislature stipulates that is provided within the region. So we're kind of looking at what is currently in place, what do we need to connect, what do we need to expand upon. So that is something that is continually evolving, and that is part mm-hmm. of CICS and the supervisors that are a part of that.
Well, there must be at least one website that we could send people to access some of this information.
You bet. If folks go to the Story County website, there is a link to the CICS website as well. So with any of the county websites that are within our region, folks should be able to either receive the information regarding general assistance programs in their county or be connected to CICS.
And our county website is storycountyiowa.gov, and Iowa is spelled out.
Okay. I get we have that website we often give on KHOI, so people should know that one.
And the CICS website would be CICSMHDS.org.
C-I-C-S.
M-H-D-S.
M-H-D-S dot org. That's a little harder to remember.
Yeah.
So, and that stands for Central Iowa, what?
Community Services.
Yes.
Mental Health and Disability Services.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. It sounds like there is a lot available in Story County, and I wonder how many people know about it.
Certainly. Anything we can do to market the services available, we're always happy to do and trying to get that word out.
Well, thank you. And that's why you drove over the icy roads to get in here today, is that?
Most definitely.
Well, thank you so much for coming in. And I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio, and we just heard from Lisa Heddens, Story County Supervisor, and Carla Webb, telling us about community services for people with disabilities. Continuing with the same theme, we have Anna Magnuson, Executive Director of Iowa ABLE Foundation, to tell us about the work of that foundation. And with her, we have Linda Hagedorn, who is the president of the League of Women Voters, who's here to tell us about a very interesting activity of the League to help people with disabilities vote. So let's begin with you, Anna. What is the mission of Iowa ABLE Foundation?
So the mission of Iowa ABLE Foundation is to empower Iowans with disabilities, their families, and the aging to achieve and maintain independence through lending, educating, and advancing. All that to say that we help Iowans with disabilities be able to acquire that which they need, like a hearing aid, ramps, the financial component to make sure that they're able to get those items that they might need to be able to achieve and maintain independence.
Well, I would imagine one of the most important things that they may need is access to a caregiver.
Yes. Now, we do not provide funding for that, unfortunately.
But you do have advice for where people can reach. Are there what kind of organizations provide caregivers?
Yes. Well, what's interesting is that I just was talking to Shelley Jaspering, who's a resident of Ames, and talking about her issue with caregivers. So she needs she has a spinal cord injury and lives in Ames, and she was talking about the issues with caregivers. So she has to go through an agency to be able to get her support. But Susan, can I go back for a second?
Do you mind? Sure.
So one of the things, first of all, I wanted to talk about KHOI 89.1 FM, because today I'm here because I brought chocolate cake to the station yesterday.
Well, thank you. That was wonderful. I had not realized that that would have been the thing to greet you with, because
yes,
we love that cake.
Oh, good. Well, what's funny is that, so KHOI is all about community building, and I was on Paul's show once, and I just think everybody here, Eric, is amazing, and so I wanted to bring a cake to say thank you. And then we talked about possibly coming on to your show this morning to talk about Iowa ABLE Foundation, but also I brought cupcakes to Tricia Crane, who is Executive Director of the Arc of Story County, after I dropped off the cake here. And then Tricia told me about, so Tricia and I work in the same building, at the little annex building off of Sheldon. And so Tricia was telling me about how they are doing at Arc of Story County, doing mock caucus training for individuals with disabilities. And I said, tell me more. And then when Ursula texted me and said, would you like to come on the show? I said, actually, Tricia would be better, because this is so timely with the debate last night and the caucuses coming up on the 3rd. But Tricia couldn't make it. So what I love about building communities is that even though Tricia can't be here, I just want to talk a little bit about Arc of Story County, who is my neighbor. So Tricia has been the executive director since 2011. And if you don't know Arc of Story County, they provide support and advocacy for families and to persons with intellectual and developmental disabilities as they learn, play, and work and grow within their community. So Tricia can tell me later if I messed up her mission statement, but I did my best. But they provide training on transportation training. Like if you're nervous about figuring out how to use public transportation, they can help with that. Project Search is another program. But this mock training is so exciting. I'm so happy that you're here with us to talk the League of Women Voters. She told me in her office as I was giving her the cupcakes about how the League of Women Voters had an instrumental part in doing this mock caucus trainings. And
smiling at all the things you bring together. And I was thinking, what have we learned? If you care about people, please let Anna know, particularly if this fits in. She will bring you cupcakes or a wonderful chocolate cake.
Yes. Banana bread is my specialty. Anna Banana Bread. So
Anna Banana?
Yes. And then I should say also Friendship Arc is in our same building as well. So Friendship Arc is another amazing organization. Jennifer Ellis is the executive director. And what the spirit of KHOI, again, that building community. So Tricia, Arc of Story County, Friendship Arc, Jennifer Ellis, and myself with the Iowa ABLE Foundation really have lots of conversations about how we can work together because, as you know, Susan, and as you know, and Paul knows, that it takes all of us to make a difference in the community. And so if we come from a place of abundance where there are enough resources for everybody, every single person in Story County and Ames area will be able to live the life they're meant to live. So,
well, thank you. And I believe, since we're doing plugs, that you have a new program on KHOI, isn't it? Twice a month, is that right?
Yes, Susan. So we have a show called I Am ABLE Iowa, which is on the first and last Saturday of the month from 9 in the morning till 10. And so we were given this opportunity because we came to talk to Ursula about learning how to do podcasts. And Ursula said, how would you like to do a radio show? And I said, wow, I've never done that before. Let's do something that scares the heck out of me. So Meredith Frankham is our volunteer producer and co-host. And then Daniel Hedendorf, who is placed through the Iowa Vocational Rehabilitation Services here in Ames, is my co-host. And I'll just say the last Saturday was our first show. And everybody at the station has been so incredibly supportive for newbies. Because really, I didn't know any of the training. And Eric here, he said he's the toughest, meanest trainer in all of Iowa, maybe the world. That's not true. But we'll let him say that. That's his reputation. And I don't listen, everybody, but he is tough and mean. But so everybody's really helpful. And so what we want to use this show to do is to talk about issues related to disabilities across Iowa. So when we talked to Shelley yesterday about caregiving and her obstacles that she faces, then to be able to provide resources to say, so here are the resources that if you're having an issue with caregiving or transportation, that our listeners know about Friendship Arc and about Arc of Story County and the other services that are available.
Well, that'll be a very interesting program. I put that on my schedule to listen to.
Oh, thank you, Susan.
And you just started to mention the program that brings Linda Hagedorn in. So,
yes.
Linda, would you like to tell us what's going on today?
Today, yes. We're really excited, Susan, because today we're going to be conducting some mock caucuses for the Arc of Story County. And we are really pleased because one of our goals and our mission is to empower all citizens to represent government. And certainly people with disabilities are included in that group, but often they face many more obstacles than many of us do. So by bringing this training, we hope to bring some knowledge and maybe comfort to what happens at a caucus, to empower folks to go and to be willing to participate. We're also going to be registering those who may not have registered to vote in the past. So we'll be able to do that because, you know, to be able to caucus, you have to be registered. So we'll be able to do that in time for the folks to participate in the caucus.
I think that would be one of the most helpful things because I know that registration the night of the caucus can be a long wait, depending on what your precinct is. It can take an hour. Mm-hmm. This is really a little scary thinking, but I remember the caucus of 2016, which for me was a student in a student precinct, mm-hmm. and the students was just long lines. And so for people with disabilities, this is very important to be able to do it in advance.
So let me tell you a little bit about what we're going to do, because what we wanted to do is to present caucuses, but without the partisan, without the, the politics per se. We certainly will be using words like Democratic and Republican, but we're not going to be promoting either one of the parties, because the League of Women Voters, of course, has to be completely nonpartisan. But what we're going to do is we're going to have a really brief introduction to what is an election and, you know, why we have elections. And then we're going to go right into the mock caucus. And what we have is we're going to caucus with breakfast cereal. So we're going to be deciding which breakfast cereal we like the most and which one we want to caucus for. So we will have five stations set up at the ARC, each labeled with a specific cereal that I purchased randomly. And the participants will be able to get samples of all five. They're numbered, you know, they're titled. They'll have the number on the cup of what they're eating. And then we'll give them a time to, you know, savor the cereal and decide which one they like best. And then they can do some conversations about why they like this best and which one is best. And then we're going to do a Republican type of caucus where we'll hand out a ballot. And they get to vote for which one they like the best. They can only choose one. And then we'll announce those results. And then we're going to go on to the other type of caucusing, because there's another type of caucusing that better represents what the Democrats do. And then we'll ask them to kind of go into corners representing the cereal that they like. And we'll see if we have viability. You know, in the caucuses, you have to have 15% of the people present for a given candidate to be viable. So we'll see. We'll count the numbers and we'll see if we have 15% for every cereal. And hopefully we won't, because we want to show them then what happens, that how we have to disperse those people, and that you can have a chance of trying to win people over to try to get your cereal to, you know, to score highly. And we'll do that for a while, and then, of course, we'll take our vote, so to speak, by counting the numbers of folks in each of these corners and announce our results. And, you know, I think this will be as authentic as we can get with breakfast cereal, but it'll give them the idea that, you know, this is what we do. And, you know, and I want to stress that although we're using breakfast cereal, it wasn't an idea that because I didn't think that these folks could understand any, you know, about candidates. But we wanted to do this in a very nonpartisan way, so I didn't want to use people. We wanted to use something that was familiar, and we thought this would be a good way. I think this would be an excellent idea even for people without disabilities to have caucus training. So yeah. we may forward that in the future.
Well, I have been telling people about this after I heard it, and I think it's so exciting. And I said, it's like Captain Crunch versus Fruit Loops. Do you use real cereal names?
We're using real cereal. Like I said, I just picked five well-known brands and just, you know, mixed it up.
Probably not Fruit Loops. That's the one I could think of.
I didn't use Fruit Loops.
But, well, this sounds really, really like a really good idea. And as you say, it would probably be beneficial to a lot of people who are new to the caucuses.
Mm-hmm. I do want to stress again that then we will have voter registration for people that have not registered to vote and get that accomplished and give them a little bit more instructions about where they caucus. We'll have that information as well.
Yes.
And we're hoping that at the ARC that there will also be some of the caretakers or the parents or other folks that there that work, you know, with the participants who may be responsible for bringing them to the caucus.
Yes. Well, this sounds like extremely important. Actually, there's a little clip that Ursula recorded at a Bernie rally with, I think, somebody who was watchdogging. But
what did you want to ask Bernie?
What are your plans to make sure your plans for education improvement for people with disabilities doesn't fall through?
And why is this important?
We keep on getting left behind by most people because we end up being the punchlines of a lot of people's jokes. They don't really understand people like me or people like us.
So people deal with disabilities by laughing at it instead of helping?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It makes me very sad.
Yeah. Thank you. What's your name?
Anne Marie.
May I put your statement on the air?
Sure. Okay. Sure.
Are you a Bernie supporter?
Yes, I'm part of the Students for Bernie team at my school, Iowa State. This is my first caucus. I'm very excited.
Where are you going to caucus?
I'm going to caucus in Iowa. I'm not really sure.
You don't know yet the location.
I do not remember off the top of my head.
Okay. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
I'm excited. I need to go. I have to go canvas some doors.
All right. Go canvas. Thank you.
I got to go back to my apartment.
That is a great advertisement for your event. You can see how important it is and why.
Well, I think that it's important to have that information. So she's obviously passionate and committed, but she doesn't know where she needs to go. So all of that information is so incredibly helpful. And League of Women Voters does such a fantastic job of helping citizens be engaged and informed.
Well, thank you. And we are always there and ready. And I want to tell folks that they indeed should look up their caucus locations. And you can start out at vote411.org to figure that out.
Thank you to Anna Magnuson, Executive Director of Iowa ABLE Foundation, and to Linda Hagedorn, President of the Ames League of Women Voters. Our last guest is here to tell us about something that it does not have to do with disabilities, but it's an exciting news source that we'll have access to right here on KHOI. Those of you who read the Des Moines Register know that their political columnist and most recently opinion page editor, Kathy Obradovich, just left the newspaper to start something new. I was eager to learn more about that, so I called Mark Witherspoon, editorial advisor to the Iowa State Daily. I'll let him tell us what has been happening in the publishing world that leads to this online venture. Here's Mark introducing us to Kathy Obradovich.
She teaches an opinion course every spring semester for the Greenlee School, but she's also been one of the best political reporters I've ever seen for years. And then just before she left the Register to start this nonprofit, she was the opinion editor for the Des Moines Register.
It seems to me that the changes in journalism have taken place very fast, especially the last few years. And I guess it's newspaper ownership in part.
Newspaper ownership in part. One of the biggest changes, though, has been the use of social media to get the word out from emails, daily emails that tell subscribers what is in the paper, to Twitter, to Facebook. All these. The latest is something called TikTok, where you post a short video, and it's not really journalism as much as it's just kind of a fun look at, you know, just kind of a pun or a funny bit that some journalists are doing. I'm sure it's elsewhere, but I've really seen it in the USA Today network because the person doing it is the former editor-in-chief of the Iowa State Daily. So
you notice it.
So I notice it, yes.
The other media change is that newspapers are now online. So everything from the Nevada Journal and the Tri-County Times have to be online. And so that's a different level of work. So in addition to laying out the paper and getting it out, and you have to worry about having it also up online at the same time.
Yes, that's the huge difference is online and Twitter, which go hand in hand, essentially. You know, whereas a reporter would go cover a city council meeting or a lecture or something like that, and the reporter would have, oh, I don't know, an hour, 2 hours to write the story afterward, and then they would put that story in the paper, and it would be published the next day. Now, if you're a reporter covering a city council meeting, you're tweeting out what happens as it's happening. So you're essentially writing your story as it's going. So the reflection that you get by coming back and writing the story after you have gotten back to the newspaper is gone to a large extent. So your ability to kind of sit and ponder about what your lead is going to be or what's the most important thing that needs to be told. Things like that, the time has shortened as far as getting that out online or on Twitter. However, used for newspapers who still have a daily or a weekly print product, you still have that time. So, but what you're doing is essentially writing bits of the story as that lecture is going on, as the city council is making decisions. And so you have little bits of the thing that you put together to, when that city council meeting is over with, you push the button and there's your story already, at least your first draft of the story. Now, you can always come back and make it fuller, more depth, more reasons behind why these decisions were made and all that. You can still do that, but the time that you have to do that is just not there anymore. The other thing that has happened, and really behind the scenes, is our deadlines for getting stories done, deadlines for editing those stories have been moved backwards. I mean, your deadlines used to be, your final deadline was like 11:30 midnight for a morning paper. And now your deadline is more, depending on what the story is, could be in the afternoon, or if it's a story that happens later, could be an 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock deadline, which also affects the quality and depth of your stories.
What you just said reminds me that there is really a difference between news gathering and opinion pages.
Let's make sure that everybody understands that a newspaper has two functions. One is to inform the people, the readers, the public about what's going on in their communities. Okay, that's one. The other one is to lead the discussion about what people think about what's going on. Okay, so to never mix. You have people who are reporters and editors who are responsible for getting the news, the sports, the, you know, arts and entertainment, all that. But then you have an opinion editor or an editorial page. I know they call them different things, but they're responsible for leading the discussion in the community about what's going on in the community. And that's the opinion page. And those sides never mix.
Or they're not supposed to.
Those sides never mix in a responsible newspaper.
Yes.
And I know you have, you know, everyone, I mean, you hear this all the time about people who are, you know, they're prejudiced and they're biased in this area. The real newspapers don't do that and are not that way. And they have their editorial page and their columnist and their who write for the editorial page. Those are different from the people who are writing and even doing opinion, your columnists who are doing not political opinion, but just everyday thing. You know, Lee Rude doing the Reader's Watchdog, Dan Finney doing the views on life. Those are different than your editorial page. Okay, so you do have some commentary, but it's more commentary about daily life and all that. No, it's not your issues that the community is dealing with.
So let's get back to Kathy Obradovich.
Uh-huh.
So when she left the Register as editor of the opinion page,
yep. Yes. Uh-huh.
And took this new venture, you understand the venture. Could you describe this a little bit? So is this strictly opinion, or is this mostly news?
Oh, no. It's going to be mostly, right? Well, the people she has, the beautiful thing about Kathy is everyone, she is one of the most respected journalists in the state, and if not the nation. And so she kind of stole some very good reporters, Clark Kaufman, Lynn Ta, some very good reporters from the Register. And so they are going to be doing reporting, and they'll be covering social issues that are important to the community. It's not going to be in fact, I don't know how much is actually going to be opinion, if any at all, because Kathy, I think her first love is also political reporting. So she will be doing probably a lot of reporting, too. There probably will be some opinion, but knowing Kathy, it will be all that will be, and the first stories we've seen are real depth stories that about issues that are affecting the community.
And anybody can get this, right? Just by signing up?
Oh, yeah, just signing up, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
How do you think that this will affect journalism at large? She says, you know, these will be stories will be available to any newspaper that wants them.
Well, it's going to provide more reporting. The reason there's not as much news is the inability to maintain the number of reporters who are reporting for your newspaper. That is the one thing that is probably the most important, as far as you don't have as much news coming out of the newsroom anymore as you did when you had more money to pay more reporters. Okay, so you don't have any more reporters. That right there is going to decrease the amount of news stories you have. So the fact that you have nonprofits like Kathy's nonprofit coming up and doing stories helps tremendously, at least increasing the number of stories that people have to read. And when you have the quality of reporters that she has at her nonprofit, you're going to have very good stories coming out of that newsroom.
You've been listening to KHOI Community Radio, and we were hearing from Mark Witherspoon, editorial advisor to the Iowa State Daily, talking to us about the Iowa Capital Dispatch, Kathy Obradovich's new online newspaper. And it was only 1 week old when we spoke. But as I read it, I can see it is already a mature publication. There is a large variety of articles by many different reporters. There is a commentary section for opinions, clearly marked as such. As a novice when it comes to Twitter, I was interested to see how this publication makes use of many hashtag Twitter feeds, just as Mark explained. After last night's debate, I clicked the link for iowacapitaldispatch.com, and I could only say I think that its sophisticated use of the new features of social media certainly seemed to bring a new glow to Iowa news. And on debate night, I noticed that I was guided to the Des Moines Register's page, which included a full transcript of the debate, which is especially good for people who weren't able to hear it. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host for today, Susan Franzen. Other voices you heard were Lisa Heddens, Carla Webb, Anna Magnuson, Linda Hagedorn, and Mark Witherspoon. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, which includes links to today's stories. And we'll be sure to have some links to the our guests on disabilities. There were lots of important links to important services that they have. Local Talk was engineered by Paul Hertz. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards for their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Tecumseh by Peter Ostrushko from Postcards, Travels with a Great American Roadshow. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878
That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.